That might be hours from now, and it would not be so violent as before. Its energies bled into heat. For a moment I dared to think that we might be safe. Then I thought about the elevators below us. They might have slowed down as well, or even been flung off the thread. Completely automatic safety systems may have come online. But there was no way to know for sure, and if the car below was still ascending at normal speed, it would run into us very soon indeed. I thought about it for a few moments before speaking, raising my voice above the moans of the injured. "I'm sorry," I said, "but there's something I've just thought of." There was no time to explain. They'd just have to follow me or take the consequences of staying in the elevator. Not even time to get to the elevator's emergency airlock. It would take at least a minute to cycle all 7, or 6 now, of us through it. Besides, the further we could get away from the thread, the safer we'd be if there was a collision between the elevators. There was really only one option. I retrieved the clockwork gun from my suit pouch, gripping it clumsily in my gloved fingers. There was no way to aim it with any precision, but thankfully none was called for. I merely pointed the gun in the general direction of the fracture pattern left on the glass by the falling servitor. Someone tried to stop me, not understanding that what I was doing might save their lives, but I was stronger. My finger pulled the trigger. In the gun, nanoscale clockwork unraveled, unleashing a ferocious pulse of stored molecular binding energy. A haze of flechettes ripped from the barrel, shattering the glass, creating a widening network of fractures. The window puckered outward, straining, and then broke into a billion white shards. The storm of air hurled all of us through the ragged opening into space. I held on to the gun, clinging to it as if it were the only solid thing in the universe. I looked around frantically, trying to orientate myself relative to the others. The wind had knocked them all in different directions, like the fragments of a star shell. But though our trajectories were different, we were all falling downward. Below was only planet. My suit spun slowly, and I saw the elevator again, still attached to the thread, climbing away above me as I fell, growing smaller by the second. Then there was an almost subliminal flash of motion as the elevator which had been riding the thread below flashed by, still climbing at normal ascent speed, and an instant later, an explosion almost as bright and quick as one of the nuke flashes. When the flash had gone, there was nothing left at all. Not even thread. Chapter 4. Sky Houseman was 3 when he saw the light. Years later, in adulthood, that day would be his first clear memory, the earliest that he could clearly anchor to a time and place and know to be something from the real world, rather than some phantasm which had transgressed the hazy border between a child's reality and its dreams. He had been banished to the nursery by his parents. He had disobeyed them by visiting the Dolphinarium, the dark, dank, forbidden place in the belly of the great ship Santiago. But it was Constanza who had really led him astray. She who had taken him through the warren of train tunnels, walkways, ramps, and stairwells to reach the place where the dolphins were hidden. Constanza was only 2 or 3 years older than Skye, but in his eyes she was almost fully grown, supremely wise in the ways of the adults. Everyone said Constanza was a genius. That one day, perhaps when the flotilla was nearing the end of its long, slow crossing, she would become the captain. It was said half in jest, but half in seriousness as well. Skye wondered if she would make him her second-in-command when that day came, the two of them sitting together in the control room he had still never visited. It was not such a ridiculous idea. The adults also kept telling him that he